Yes. And we want to make it easy for her so that everything match, you know, can mix and match together. And she feels confident styling those pieces herself.
This is The Safari. The Safari is a tour around the consumer, brand, and retailing industry. And we have the great privilege here at my company, Traub, to really be exposed to many of the great minds of the industry who are forming and shaping the future of many different parts of the consumer, brand, and retail world. And I felt it was quite interesting for us to be able to not only learn from all of those people as we do every day, but memorialize it into a podcast, which could then be shared with many of our friends and clients and you, obviously, the listener.
Hi, this is Kate Durge, and today on The Safari, I'm speaking with Elise Ahrens, founder and CEO of the lifestyle fashion brand Frances Valentine. Elise and I speak about infusing joy, fun, and color into every aspect of their brand, creating a multi-generational loyal community, and the realities of growing a successful business. I loved hearing Elise's insights, and I hope you enjoy. Hi. So today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Elise Ahrens, founder and CEO of Frances Valentine. Welcome, Elise.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you so much. Thanks
good
for having me.
Good morning. Well, I'm so thrilled to see you. But as I'm looking at your bright, beautiful sweater, I want our listeners to know I'm also looking at the most beautiful XO. So I feel like you're blowing me a hug and a kiss through the screen.
It's that personal touch.
It is. It's beautiful. Well, we're blowing the hug and the kiss to our listeners. And you have such a beautiful story, Elise, and what you have done over the years, from Kate Spade to Frances Valentine and how you've built the brand. And I know our listeners are very familiar with Frances Valentine and your story, but I'm really excited to be able to share your story with everyone today. So maybe that's a good place to start, which is sharing your story and sort of how you were a girl in Kansas and coming and made it in New York City.
Okay, I'm happy to. So, well, as you know, I grew up on a farm in Kansas. I was the youngest of four daughters on a 1,500-acre farm. We raised cattle, corn, soybeans, milo, everything. And there was never enough hours in the day to get the work done on a farm. It was 24/7. You're on all the time. My mother used to joke that the cattle don't know it's Christmas. The animals, the horses don't know it's Christmas. Because I was like, can we please open our gifts first? And she's like, no, you go out and feed the cattle first. I am still a very busy person. I like to be busy all the time. I moved to New York after college, really interested in having a career in journalism, in fashion magazines in particular, and hit the streets and applied for every job and took typing tests. And I never made it to the magazine, but I did get a job in marketing at a company called J.G. Hook at the time, an old-fashioned company. I'm not sure it's still around or not, but it was probably a precursor to J. Crew because it was a very preppy East Coast company. And then moved from there to Mary Tan Francois Gerbeau, which was a French jean company, very popular in the 80s and 90s. And I loved working for them. It was so much fun. I flew all over the country and all over Europe doing marketing work for them, which was a blast. And my best friend in college, who I met when I was 18 at KU, we had always wanted to have a business together. We just never knew what that business was. She had joined me in New York at one point, and her boyfriend also joined us. And we talked about it through the years. Oh, what kind of business are we going to have? And we never really figured out what we were going to do. So I'm, you know, working for Gerbeau, traveling all the time. And one night, Katie and Andy called me with an idea to start a handbag company, because Katie had been the accessories editor at Mademoiselle for years and then became fashion editor and was pretty much ready to leave. She'd been there for quite some time. And she had noticed that there was a real lack in the marketplace for chic, cool American style bags. And I completely believed in the concept. I quit the job that I loved to join them. And we started Kate Spade. And it was rough going. We were broke forever. But it was, it was an exciting time in my life. I was in my late 20s or probably 30 years old at the time. So I'd had some experience. I felt confident about what I could bring to the table. And we started Kate Spade. We added all these product categories over time, as you know, handbags, shoes, stationery, tabletop. You know, we did some apparel pieces, and it really became a full lifestyle brand. We opened retail stores, we started internationally, and it was such an exciting time of life. It was really, really amazing. And you had to keep pinching ourselves thinking, yeah, is this really happening?
Well, and as you're watching every young career woman walk around the streets of New York City and all these cities with the nylon bag, which I had straight out of college, you know, it's just such a moment.
Yes, exactly. It was kind of a rite of passage for women who were in their 20s, that when they were just starting out in business, because it made them feel like they made it for the
Absolutely.
First time. They saved up. The stories I hear from women today who are my age who said, oh my gosh, my first investment was a Kate Spade bag. And so that always makes me feel great.
Yeah.
So we started that company in 1993. There were four partners in that company, Katie, Andy, Pamela Bell, and myself. And it was great having three partners because you always had someone to rely on. It was
wonderful.
And everybody brought something to the table, and we all four made it successful. So cut to 2006, we had an offer from Neiman Marcus to buy the company, and we sold them the company. We had agreed to work for them for another 6 months, and all of our families took a vacation together to celebrate. It's wonderful. And we all thought, oh, yay, we never have to work again.
Right.
And you don't realize how much you're going to miss work. But so Katie and I both threw ourselves into working at our children's schools. I had three daughters by that point. And I was PA president. Chaired a lot of events, and then I became board chair at the school for many years. And I learned so many things during that time. You just don't think you're going to, but I learned so many things really about nonprofit work and utilizing people's skills who are willing to volunteer for things and how much to appreciate that. And I loved doing it, but Katie and I really missed fashion, creating and designing things. So we started working on Frances Valentine in 2014 and launched it in 2016. And we started that with handbags and shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, what Katie loved the most. It was exciting to start all over again. It was really fun. And, you know, you think you know all you need to know about everything, but the world had changed quite a bit in those 10 years. So we, you know, e-commerce was king, and, you know, we had been sort of traditional wholesalers before. So we had a plan of doing half wholesale and half e-com, and it ended up being, you know, 90% e-commerce in the end, because retail was rather soft at that point. So we kind of have grown that business, and tragedy struck, as you know, in 2018, and we lost Katie that year. And it was really sort of at a crossroads of what to do. Mm-hmm. So the small team here, we decided to move forward really to keep Katie's legacy going,
of course,
for her family's sake. And, because I think that's what she would want us to do.
Yeah.
So kept going with the handbags and shoes. And we added two apparel pieces that had been her favorite vintage pieces. One was a embroidered caftan, and one was a hand embroidered sweater that we had collected, you know, 30 years before together. Mm-hmm. And they sold out immediately, and they sold out again and again. And then all of our customers started asking for the things that I was using for styling in our ad campaigns, which were all my vintage pieces that we had collected for years. And so, I said, oh, we'll never make pants. Now we make pants.
Right.
We'll never make jackets. Now we make jackets. And now we have a full apparel collection that we actually started wholesaling about 2 years ago. So along with our e-commerce business, we have 9 retail stores that we've opened since then, since 2018. We have an extremely healthy and growing wholesale business because it's new for the wholesalers. They're just clamoring for it, and we're busy all the time doing that. So it's a full lifestyle brand with those three categories as well as jewelry. And our mantra is wear what makes you happy. And as you know, a lot of our brand is focused around color and And we really try and focus on those vintage silhouettes that were popular when I was watching my mom get ready to go to a cocktail party when I was growing up, and her hair was up and she had on a fabulous outfit that might've been chiffon.
Yeah.
thinking about those outfits, I see a lot of them in Palm Royale right now, by the way. Yeah. So it's really those nostalgic pieces, but made in a more modern way. So we try and put pockets in just about everything we do.
Which is the best, yes.
More modern fabrications, but still really trying to keep to those natural fabrications. And just making really beautiful clothes that give women the confidence to dress in the personal style that they embrace.
Well, what I have loved, you know, over the years watching Frances Valentine evolve and grow, and you have said this in other interviews, but the joy that you bring to women's lives and the connectivity when these women are able to talk about their clothes and their style and, you know, the connections they have with certain pieces. And it's interesting because it feels like a very common thread here on the Safari podcast when the, you know, other CEOs and founders of businesses, when they talk about joy, the impact and the difference that makes to your customer and how that loyalty really remains so true to a brand when they look at a piece of Frances Valentine or that they have in their closet and they see that joy. And you have talked about that. I love that.
We'll have a customer come into the store and just maybe for the first time and walk in and say, oh my gosh, I want everything.
Yeah.
It's sort of like going rug shopping in Marrakesh or something. You see everything. You're like, oh my God,
I want it all.
Yeah. One thing.
Yeah.
Right. But I do feel like how you dress can change your mood for the day. And I know wearing the hot pink sweater I have on right now is making my mood elevated today. Yeah. It makes me happy when I pass by the mirror or the many people who have given me compliments on the sweater or my bright colored skirt today. That just boosts your mood. It makes you happy. It makes you feel good. And I think that is really important in the sort of the brand DNA is wearing really great things that can boost your mood.
That elevate your mood. Well, as I told you before we started, I went to pick up the black jacket or the colorful jacket. No one's seen us except for the two of us. But I was like, I got to wear color. I'm talking to Elise.
Thank you.
And I want to bring the same joy that you bring through your clothes. So you're doing an incredible job with that. But talk to me about how do you stay engaged with the consumer? You've talked about how you have 9 stores. And by the way, where are those 9 stores now?
Our first store was on Madison Avenue. So we're at Madison and 73rd. We have one in Sag Harbor, New York, in the Hamptons. We have Palm Beach off Worth Avenue.
Yep.
We have Naples in the Waterside Shops. We've got a store in Houston. We've got one in Dallas. We have Atlanta, Alexandria, and Birmingham.
Amazing. So you have that brick and mortar ability to really engage with the consumer in the physical world. How is that translating into your e-com business, you know, social? I mean, I think I have heard from you that you're really focusing on the boomers and the Gen X generation. But I am curious to hear about how you engage with them and what the learnings are from that engagement.
Yeah, so I love going out to visit our stores and I do it at every opportunity. And anytime I'm invited to go speak somewhere, I was just down in Washington, D.C. for the week last week and I had 3 speaking engagements. We threw a party at the store and various other things that were happening that week. And I love sticking around and speaking to women after. What do they like? What are they looking for? What do they like about the particular thing they're wearing today? And I just get so much out of it and working in those specific communities. And it's really easy in this, you know, areas in which we have stores.
Yeah.
But we also have been able to do trunk shows in areas where we do not. And I'll tell you, meeting with the women in those communities is just, it's so insightful to me. I get so much out of it. And I hope they do. But we just have a lot of fun together. I think that's my favorite form of engagement because I think it creates a real community around the brand. But we also, you know, we have a lot of organic social media we do. Our catalogs are really big with our customers, the over 40 customers.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was one of those things that I thought when our team brought it to me was kind of old fashioned. I was like, who does a catalog anymore? But it was, you know, right when COVID started, when we put out our first one. It was fortuitous for us because everybody was home, but the catalogs have been incredible for our customers. Honestly, they use it almost as a fashion magazine. They want the head to toe look. They want the top she's got on, the skirt, the shoes, the bag, the earrings. They come in and want the head to toe look. So I think it's really helpful for especially busy women who really don't have time to think about styling outfits. They're like, I have to go do this. I've got X, Y, and Z. Help me figure these outfits out.
Make it easy. Yeah.
Yes. And we want to make it easy for her so that everything can mix and match together. Mm-hmm. And she feels confident styling those pieces herself.
Mm-hmm. And I love that story about your catalog, because you and I have spoken about this before, that it was fortuitous that you had literally shot the first catalog and we're on the plane back. COVID's hitting. It's, March of 2020. But you were able to move through with it. And that was really when your e-com started to grow because of the catalogs in home.
It was a funny thing because we were in Florida and it didn't feel much like COVID down there, but the rest of the country was really feeling it. Yeah. And I remember all of our partners, our significant others on the shoot, were texting us saying, I got toilet paper. I got paper towels. And we're all like, what does that mean? What's that for? Because we were, our heads were in the photo shoots.
So
we came home that Friday the 13th and to a completely different world. That following Monday, everything was shut down that weekend. And the following Monday, we all started working on Zoom and working from home for months, really long time. I had to have all the samples shipped to my home rather than the office.
Yeah.
And, it worked out. And luckily for us, that catalog dropped May of 2020. So it was after the initial shock of, what was happening, but people were still very sad and nervous.
Yeah.
And I think that catalog gave people sort of a sense of there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And I can buy that yellow embroidered caftan and I can go to that garden party in July this year, but it gave them a sense of hope and that there was something beyond what we were experiencing at the time. So I feel like, that was fortuitous for us at the moment.
That's amazing. Again, infusing the joy right when people needed it the most, truly. And the growth of e-com business, what percentage of the business is e-com versus brick and mortar versus wholesale?
That's changed over time. Initially, it was around 90% of our business.
Wow.
And then, as we have added retail stores, we had, I think during COVID, we had four or five stores open by the time COVID hit. So we had to close those five. But our retail business was growing. Mm-hmm. And, since we reopened them after the COVID scare, those have been just growing and growing. And we've added four more since then. So we've got nine stores today. Our retail stores are great. I think people want really afterwards, after going through that whole thing, they really wanted to get out and experience things again, just to have experiences and be able to buy some things that they could touch and feel and try on first. And then, it was, again, about 2 years ago, it was after COVID or during that we launched our apparel for wholesale.
Right.
And immediately we had stores come in. We had Neiman's and Saks and Dillard's and, they are really doing very well. And we've got the best specialty stores in the country. We're in about 100 specialty stores. So wholesale is growing the quickest right now.
Yeah.
And as retail and wholesale are growing, they're taking a bit more of the business from e-commerce. I don't want to say taking it, but as far as the percentage goes, e-commerce is still over 50%. But
you're growing these other areas. Yeah.
Every 6 months they're each taking a little bit, and it'd be nice to have an equal balance between them because, if there's something going on in one channel, then you've got the other two.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of growth, so, post COVID, as you said, people are back out there entertaining the lifestyle of Frances Valentine. What did that look like for you? Because, you do have a home collection, you do have fragrance, what was the timing of those line extension, those category growth?
So our first ones were handbags and shoes. Mm-hmm. We then added apparel. And at the same time we added apparel, we added jewelry. Some of the jewelry we make ourselves, some of it we buy from other designers just because they do it so well.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be accused of ever knocking anybody off, but if you really love somebody and they are willing to sell wholesale, we prefer to do that.
Yeah.
So really nice to be able to do. So we have sort of a curated collection of beautiful jewelry as well. We did a few home pieces ourselves, And they were successful and they did well, but it wasn't really our forte. The design was, but the manufacturing and distribution of it were pretty much different channels. So what we decided to do was really look for a partner with whom to do that. And Annie Selke came along and I met them at a conference out in California. And they said, we really want to do a collaboration. We said, we do too. So we did bedding with them last year. This year we have washable rugs that are just to die for. They're so
great.
Cute.
And
our stores keep selling out of them and asking for more. We've got a soft goods license, even though we used to make all of our own soft goods, that is gloves and mittens and hats and scarves, silk scarves, et cetera. We were approached by a really wonderful company that's been around forever named Founds. Mm-hmm. So we design it and they manufacture and distribute, all of our gloves, all of the soft goods for us. And that's launching this fall.
Oh, that's exciting. Yes. And fragrance is in there as well?
We had a lot of customers ask, why don't you guys do a fragrance? So right. We worked on one and launched last year and it's called Patio. And we've distributed it only ourselves because we just don't have the bandwidth to have a salesperson to, go to all the fragrance mm-hmm. people at all the department stores. So we've distributed ourselves through our own stores and online. And it's a wonderful scent. It really just reminds you of the beginning of spring and summer. And it just takes you there. I wear it all year round because it makes me happy.
Yeah. That again, the joy of the fragrance of the clothes you're wearing. And so talk to me, I keep bringing up joy, but how do you infuse joy, not only in the product, but you have products that give back to the community. So I want to talk a little bit about what Frances Valentine does to bring joy in that sense.
So we there are a lot of things that we have been able to do as a small business. It's not always easy to, attach yourself to a larger charitable component, but we have found several who we work with. And one of the things that we love to do is where we have stores or where we do trunk shows to look at that community and help in that community. We do a lot of women's shelters. For instance, in Palm Beach and in Naples, we have associated with those two women's shelters for years. So I think it's a really good thing to do because there's a need in those communities and it's something we can give back to women. And then one national one that's kind of close to my heart is Hope for Depression. And Hope for Depression is one where they're working on medications, their research for medications, because there have not been new medications out to help with depression. So really putting money behind the research for those medications to evolve. Their work has been fantastic and all the money they raise goes to that research.
That's incredible. And is that a specific product that you have? Is that a percentage of sales or is that just,
we support them in a lot of different ways. We'll sponsor something or, donate bags to, either a fundraiser that they're doing or to the folks involved in the fundraising. So we've been involved in a lot of different ways with them and hope to continue to. There are other things that we have been involved with that I feel really strongly about. Again, as a small company, it's hard to completely participate in sustainability and making your entire company sustainable. We decided about 5 years ago, we were going to change all of our packaging to sustainable packaging. We use bags that are made out of cornstarch. Or we will use recycled plastic when necessary. We also give 25 cents from every single order shipped anywhere to a company called Clean Hub, and they clean plastic out of the ocean. And I want to say we cleaned 20,000 pounds to date just with our with their efforts. And it's a really great organization.
That's incredible.
And then, we also use as many sustainable materials as we can to keep our products affordable for our customer. And the nice thing is that is becoming more and more available to smaller businesses. And those price points are coming down on the fabric yardage for us. So it's nice. The more we can do there, we do every single season.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That is so great. And in terms of the growth of the business, here you are, founder and CEO. You know, what are some of the greatest challenges you face aside from COVID, which, by the way, as you were talking about COVID, you flew back on March 13th from Florida. I flew to Florida on March 13th. So we crossed paths, but it is amazing because it feels like that was just yesterday. And again, it was 4 years ago. So much has transpired since then. But aside from those COVID challenges, what have been some of the greatest challenges you have seen with Frances Valentine and as the CEO?
You know, over the period of time in which we've been in business, which I guess is 7 or 8 years, finding employees for particular jobs has been taxing. It took us forever to find a controller because there was a controller shortage. So people weren't going into that business, you know, quite as much. And to find someone experienced and great, it took us months to find someone. And I think, that's been one of those challenges. I think the people part is always the most difficult part because you want to find the right people for your company culture.
Yeah.
And our culture is polite, gracious, and kind. And, there's people with great experience out there and they might not prioritize being gracious.
Right.
So it's hard to find that exact perfect person. And I think we struggled and everybody was wearing three hats at the company for a very long time until we rounded out, our team here, but we have them and I'm very happy about that. Another challenge that's been a continual challenge as we had, and you know, this being a business person, as we have grown is finding investment for that growth. And so a lot of my time has been pitching investors, both small and large, individuals and VCs on investing in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, talking about the growth we're seeing and
where you want to go. Yeah.
Right. And where we want to go. And you need capital for growth because you've got a market for your e-commerce, and that's gotten a lot more expensive. You know, it used to cost $15 to gain a customer and now it's $300.
Right.
So it's just very different. And it's challenging during this economy, even though the economy is great.
But it is still a challenge. So talk to me a little bit about that, because I think that's really interesting. And for other entrepreneurs, you know, founders out there, you know, you're not alone. You know, there's so many brands who are successful and they're in a good place, but in order to continue to grow, they need that capital. And so, you know, when you're talking to these investors, like, what's your real priority for growth? What do you need to know? What do you need and where are you looking to go? I guess that's
right.
Right.
So we know what we need to get there, and it's capital for marketing. It's capital for the production orders that we've got.
Yeah.
And I know it's extremely difficult for a lot of small businesses to even get debt right now, to even get a bank loan. It's really tough. And particularly if you're a young business and you aren't profitable yet, it just makes it all that more difficult because you really need someone who believes in your brand, who is emotionally attached and can say, I believe in this and I'm going to do this with you. Those are the kind of investors that we have been looking for. And, you know, we have male and female investors. I think, you know, for us, our female investors really understand the brand because they lived through like you did the Kate Spade brand. And I feel that sense of growth right now, like the time it's just getting ready to like take off right now at Frances Valentine. And, so now is the time where we need to fully capitalize the company.
Mm-hmm. Well, I get it, understandably. And the goal for the growth is additional brick and mortar stores. Is it new categories? What's the vision?
So, it's really building out all areas. So it's marketing for e-commerce. It's actually marketing with our partners in the wholesale realm because they need, you know, they all do their own advertising and catalogs and really giving them those marketing tools to be able to advertise our brand and provide a lot more brand awareness for us. And then, you know, also for our retail stores to build out those where it's right. And the regions, you know, we've got areas of the country where we know we need a store. Yeah. I've had 5 people in the last, you know, week say, you really need to have a store in Charleston. And we know it.
You're like, I know. One more person tells me. Yeah.
We know it. I've been looking since 2019 in Charleston. Mm. And I slept on it too long. And then, you know, here we are.
Yeah.
But we know that there are so many more markets where our product is selling really well on mm-hmm. e-commerce and through our wholesale partners where we should have a store.
Yep. So that's
the funny thing is when we do open a store, our e-commerce business goes up by over 25% in that location because it's the brand awareness.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was going to ask that, you know, what's your greatest brand awareness, but would you say it's really your stores?
I think the stores are probably the best part. Our stores and our catalog, because I think the catalog reaches people who might not be in an area where there is a store.
Mm-hmm. So to that point, your database for your catalog, how have you grown that? Is that through social media? Is that through wholesale and they log in and they sign up for the catalog? Like, where has that growth come from?
So all of those. Yeah. And then the catalog company we use is Bilardi Wong. And we have access to a lot of databases that are, you know, like our customers. So it's easy to find, you know, new prospects that way.
Right. And your demo, again, going back to this idea of the overlooked boomers and Gen Xers, but that's really your sweet spot. That's your demo. As you said,
it has primarily been our customer mm-hmm. since we launched. And I think it's, again, those women who were original Kate Spade customers who, you know, have kind of grown up with Katie and me.
Right.
And, you know, now they might be 50, you know, 40, 50, 60. And so I think that's who our original customer has been. She has brought her daughter along. Maybe she brought her mother along, because our age group just spans the gamut. And I was surprised by our marketing director's data analysis this week. She says, we have a lot more customers over the age of 25, between 25 and 35 than you even know. And I was like, really? So I believe it is, you know, one of those things. And we know it in our stores. There are a lot of mothers and daughters shopping together.
Yeah.
It becomes a generational thing.
Right. I was going to ask about your daughters. They must be so proud of you, first of all, but are they fans of the brand? Do they wear?
They are. Well, you would only know it because I'll go to my closet to pull something out to wear and it's missing.
Yeah.
they do borrow my clothes a lot and more, you know, on the sweaters and shoes and handbags kind of thing than skirts, because I'm a full skirt gal and my daughter, you know, they're a lot more body conscious. They want to show off their darling skinny waist.
Yeah. Yeah. But they must be great feedback for you in terms of just what's working, what's not, that, you know.
It really is. If I do a social post and they all like it, I know I've done well.
Yeah.
And one, you know, that the mom, that's kind of corny. Like, don't do that. Don't say that.
So cringy, mom. That's what I hear.
Well, they have helped me. My one daughter is a film major, so she's very good at editing things, and she will give me hints on tips on how to edit certain things. And I'm still not good at it. I'm still learning.
We're all learning. I mean, have they taken you to TikTok? Are you doing anything on TikTok, or is your customer not there? That's actually, you know.
No, I think we do have a customer there. And we do use TikTok. And, you know, I think Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, those are all relevant for fashion businesses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's helpful to have all different generations on those and not be so salesy, but be authentic with styling pieces. Because mm-hmm. I think that's what I like to see.
Yeah.
I don't want to be sold something necessarily. I want to see how someone is using it and why they like it so much.
Well, and again, your brand is a lifestyle brand. So how are you wearing it throughout your day into the evening in a real way versus, you know, I think back in the day where it was just brands spoke to the customer, not with them. And it was so stylized that it didn't feel real.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally agree.
It makes such a difference. Well, okay. So Elise, question for you, because you've had this incredible career. And as I said, I just flashbacks to my Kate Spade nylon bag that, you know, I had 2 of them, black and brown. And I was so proud of them. But what would you say to a young woman in Kansas who's looking to make it in New York City and looking to, you know, she has an idea and a brand in mind, but what would be your greatest advice to that young woman in Kansas or anywhere, just in terms of like how to do it?
I would say go work for somebody who you admire, you think does a really good job doing what they're doing. Learn as much as you can from them. Show up early, stay late, ask every question in the book, and learn as much as you can. Pretend it's your business.
Yeah.
Why are they doing what they're doing? Why are they spending money on this? Why are they saving money on this? You know, the more you learn, and even if it's not in the exact business that you want to open, it is experience and it's business. And you think it's not going to make a difference when you start yours, but it will.
Yeah.
Because I did a lot of different things before I even got into the fashion business. I waited tables and I bartended. I did what I had to do to pay off student loans and to be able to live in New York City. I had to have three jobs when I first got here.
Right.
So, but I think it builds character.
Yeah.
And I think it's important. And it forces you to, you know, even when you're at your lowest point, you know you can get through it. Just have hope and work as hard as you can and get as much experience as you possibly can before you go out on your own.
Yeah, I love that because I do believe in experience. It can be applicable to anything you do. And I think people get so caught up in having to be in this one lane and this is what I'm focused on. But the reality is, you know, it is so important to have the skills and you can apply it to the different industries or different aspects of the industry.
Exactly. I love it when I see on someone's resume when they've added those, I waited tables in college.
Yeah.
I worked every summer through college, even if it was at the grocery store ringing up people. I shouldn't say even if.
Yeah.
Those are jobs that teach you people skills. They teach you math skills. They teach you, you know, just so many things that you get out of those jobs. So I love it when I see people who worked in high school and in college.
Yeah. And well, as you said, you know, here you had this incredible brand, Kate Spade, you sold it, and then you took 10 years to help with the school and be, you know, head of the parents association and the skills you got from that were so different from the brand you were running and then applied to what you're doing now. So I think that's also really interesting because it also shows you don't have to have this trajectory of a, 30 year career where you're just going grindstoning and, you know, grinding it out, but to take that break still allowed you to grow.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I did. It was such a surprise to really, in retrospect, look back on that time.
Yeah.
Think of how much I learned. I mean, we had to actively go through the whole process of selling our business initially to Neiman Marcus. So we had a lot of pitches to do. And I got a lot of experience doing that. But it wasn't really until I was the board chair at our school, and we were building a high school, that we had to raise $40 million to build the high school. And yeah. I was co-chair of the capital campaign. So I learned how to ask for money.
Yeah.
And it was such a learning experience. It was really great. And to show, I mean, that's a whole different commodity because it was about our children. It
right.
was easy to ask for, but it was such a worthwhile pursuit to me. And I never wanted to ask people for money. But
right.
I learned how to do it in a way that, you know, it didn't feel awkward to me.
Right. But that's such an interesting comparison, Elise, and I'm going to wrap things up here in a moment, but here you were raising money for children and education and an environment where kids can experience joy and fun and socialization and community. And you're doing that with your brand and the brand speaks for joy and community and having fun. So as you're growing the brand, I think how you've been able to translate through all these different aspects of your life is really admirable. So congratulations. And I'm thrilled because, as I said, I love the brand and the joy and the happiness you bring to all of us who wear the brand. So thank you for that. And thank you for your time. And to our listeners, keep an eye on Frances Valentine as you continue to grow and get into those stores. And we'll see you in Charleston, hopefully very soon.
I hope so. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Elise.
you want to learn a little bit more about Traub, you can go to traub.io, where you'll learn a lot about everything that we do. If you're enjoying the Safari, please do share it with your friends and colleagues within the industry. And please also don't forget to subscribe and like it. Until next time.